She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted.
Welcome to The Persistence. This is the She Who Persisted podcast, and we're back.
Hello.
We're back. We're still persisting. We have been missing in action for quite some time now. I mean, we put out our interviews, but we haven't really recorded any new episodes because life has been very stressful.
Life is a bitch.
Also, I'm Beatrice, and I'm here with Bethany.
Hi.
Back I'm sorry, after I my
back after my 6 month leave of absence from the UK, back in the UK, and back from gosh, 2 or 3 months of being out from the podcast.
We
are back on track and ready to go.
We're back on track. So this episode we actually wanted to record in June, Pride Month. But as Bethany already said, there's been moving around, and there's been breakdowns, and there's been accidents, and there's been losing my PhD funding because of my accident. So we've been a bit busy with other life shit. So we are recording this today, and it's about asexuality. So at the beginning of Pride Month in June, a video went viral on Facebook and Twitter. You probably saw it. It was made by Equinox and entitled LGBTQ Alphabet, 6 letters will never be enough. And it was shared and celebrated by basically all of my friends on Facebook. So I would be really surprised if you haven't seen it. Everyone seemed to find it awesome, amazing, and beautiful. However, I got really annoyed when watching it because the A of the LGBTQA alphabet, which already was the first letter, so I got annoyed at the first letter already, which is sad. the A was translated as ally, not as asexual. And, you know, I think this furthers the erasure of asexual people within the community. And I also got annoyed by the fact that my queer friends, who are very aware of political correctness and language and happy to police anyone who says things the wrong way, do not have a problem with that kind of erasure. So, and more than that, they didn't even notice it and share the video with captions about how great they think it is. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I do appreciate the sentiment of the video. I do appreciate the celebration of queer identities and queer lives. And I think the video was also beautifully made, so I did appreciate it aesthetically for many reasons. But this specific erasure of asexual people, of asexual identity, like the A in LGBTQA, is nothing to be celebrated. And this erasure and marginalization is really systematic outside and within the LGBT community. So we really need to talk about it. And this is why today we would like to talk about it. We would like to talk about asexuality. Are you ready, Bethany?
I am so ready. So before we kind of jump into asexuality and what it is and what it entails and everything like that, I just kind of wanted to go back to that whole, what does the A in LGBTQIA stand for? Because I think, you know, we talk a lot about bi erasure in one of our last episodes, and it kind of, you're just seeing this erasure happen in so many different communities. And it just reminds me how important advocacy is. So there's this really great list that I found on the UC Davis website. So that's the University of California, one of their campuses. And it's all of these amazing LGBTQIA resources. So I really recommend it. One of the things that they had on there that I really liked was this whole glossary of terms.
Sorry, can you maybe just say the website for a minute?
Sure. It's actually really easy to find too. It's lgbtqia.ucdavis.edu.
Yeah,
and one of the things that they have on there is this whole glossary of terms. And they're talking about like specifically for the LGBTQIA community, but then also kind of some general social justice stuff. And what's really cool is that because these are kind of constantly changing as more research is done and more people talk about their own personal experiences and stuff, they actually update this list as often as things change, as often as they can. So,
which is all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really cool because on there they actually have a definition for LGBT, which they define as an abbreviation for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. And they've written an umbrella term that is used to refer to the community as a whole. And then they say, our center uses LGBTQIA to intentionally include and visibilize the queer, intersex, and asexual communities under our umbrella, which I think is really important because sometimes we think like, oh, it's so much easier to say LGBT, but then you get into this issue of erasure with the QIA community feeling like they're not really a part of it. And then right underneath that, I really like this, they have LGBTQIA allyship, which they identify as the practice of confronting heterosexism, sexism, genderism, allosexism, which we'll get to, and monosexism in oneself and others out of self-interest and a concern for the well-being of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, and asexual people. It is founded on the belief and believes that dismantling heterosexism, biphobia, transphobia, and genderism, sexism, is a social justice issue. So I kind of wanted to talk about that for a moment because it made me think back, you know, talking about asexuality and things like that made me think about when I first entered into the LGBT community. So I kind of just assumed that the A stood for ally because at my undergraduate university, we didn't talk about anything LGBT related. So it was a small Christian college and we had one kind of club, and I use that term very loosely, not because it wasn't a club, but because I don't think an LGBT safe space should be called a club, that kind of supported LGBT issues, and it wasn't funded, so people didn't really talk about it. So I really want to give a shout out to my friends who kept that going strong, because without them, I never would have come to explore my own identity. And for the longest time, I kind of just assumed, oh, LGBTQIA, the Q was like questioning and the A meant ally, and all of these misconceptions that no one really called me out on because no one talked about it. I think there are probably a lot of people out there who still think that the A stands for ally. And I kind of just wanted to drop into the conversation, not in a negative way, but just to push, like, this conversation is not about you. The LGBTQIA conversation is not about you. And for people who identify as non-hetero, I really like how UC Davis separates the allies, because I feel like it gives us a chance to understand there's the LGBTQIA community, and there are hetero people who support us and who recognize that they have a voice and that that voice is powerful because it comes from a place of privilege and a place, I don't want to say necessarily of authority, but that people who are hetero have an opportunity to stand up and be advocates and be allies and to recognize that LGBTQIA issues are social justice issues. And because they're issues of inequality, they really do impact everyone. So I like this idea of dismantling heterosexism by understanding that you are powerful enough as someone who identifies as heterosexual not to need representation in the LGBTQIA community, and understanding that, you know, you can be an ally and you don't need to be, you know, praised for being an ally. You don't need to have that sort of like, oh, good job, way to go. And I think, you know, allyship, UC Davis says, is the action of working to end oppression through support of and as an advocate with and for a group other than one's own. So I think this would kind of apply to those who do identify even in that LGBTQIA group, because when you identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or trans, I think there can often be this fight to prove that your identity is valid and worth it. And we kind of talked about that in the bisexuality episode. And it can, you can kind of forget sometimes, or at least I do, about the struggles that some of the other members of the community are facing. Because I get so wrapped up in, like, I identify as a bisexual and everyone needs to know that bisexuality isn't a problem, that I forget. Despite how far I think we've come in some of these regards, we still have a whole group in our community, in this QIA element, that's largely just forgotten about or things like that.
But, you know, I think it's okay to focus. I mean, you can't do everything at the same time. It's okay to focus on specific issues.
Absolutely.
You know, it's okay to be like a bisexual activist. It's okay to be an asexual activist. It's okay to have like your thing that you're focusing on, because I think that's also sometimes necessary to do effective work. You can't save the world, you know, all at once.
Right. And the other thing is you have to speak from a place of experience, right? So I can't necessarily say like, oh, I'm going to be, you know, I can say I'm going to be an ally for someone who identifies as asexual, but I can't sit here and tell you what the asexual experience is. I can only say, here is what I've learned. Here is what my asexual friends have told me. And I can kind of be a voice for them. But yeah, you're right. Like, you can't do everything. And so be an ally, but also understand that it's okay to focus on what you know and what you understand, and educating people about that as well.
Yeah, which doesn't mean that when you talk about the issue in general, you need to erase certain people.
No.
And then also, so I think it's also, but it's also okay, again, to talk about specific subgroups of the LGBTQIA community. So it's okay, I think, to talk about just LGB people or T and I people in combination or whatever, you know, because sometimes, for example, when we talk about sexuality issues, it doesn't make sense to talk about trans people, intersex people at the same time.
Right.
Sometimes when we talk about gender identity, it doesn't make much sense to talk about L, B and G, you know. So I think it's also, but I think the important thing is that we have to be specific about the terms that we use and that we have to be aware. I think that's the point, you know.
Yeah, and that's why I really like this glossary of terms, because it kind of lays out for you exactly what each thing is as it evolves, as it develops and grows, so that as you start to speak about different experiences, you're able to understand the difference between, you know, asexual and demisexual, which I think we talk about later, because they're very, very different. And for someone who doesn't actively identify in that way, you may not understand what those differences are, but it's really important to get that education, which is why we're here, right?
Mm-hmm. Completely. So I think, you know, one of the first things that I learned when I... Interestingly, one of the first things that I learned about sexuality in general when I started researching about asexuality, which is a long time ago, but it's really something I learned from the conversation surrounding asexuality, is that we can and should probably differentiate between romantic and sexual orientation.
Mm.
So before I came across the whole subject of asexuality, for me, that was always like romantic and sexual orientation was always like the same thing. I never really understood that there's a difference, I think. And I think it's also something we don't learn, you know. It's just, we just grow up with the idea that there are just, you know, straight people and gay people, and then there are maybe bisexual people if we grow up in in a very liberal...
Depends where you are.
Yeah. But there is no, like, idea that you can be romantically attracted to people and sexually attracted to people, and that's two different things.
Well, that's even, you know, when you look at... going back into medieval literature and the idea of courtship, it's like, okay, you're going to romantically court this person with the intention of marrying them and having sex and children. And there's nothing about, okay, what is romantic feelings and romantic orientation and things like that, that don't necessarily lead to having sex. Like, sex is not the end to romantic feelings and desires, that romantic desires can in themselves be an end.
Yeah. So obviously sexual attraction is who you're sexually attracted to, and romantic attraction is who you fall in love with.
Mm.
And I think many people don't really... I find it hard to understand the difference, because for many people, I think they are sexually and romantically attracted to the same group of people.
Mm.
So it's just easier for them to describe their sexuality and romantic attraction with just like bi or gay or straight, because they're attracted to the same group of people romantically and sexually, but not everybody is that way.
Yeah.
And so those two things need not necessarily be the same group of people. So you can be an asexual biromantic, you can be heterosexual panromantic, you can be bisexual heteroromantic, endless combinations. And that also means that just because someone is asexual does not mean that they are aromantic.
Yeah.
So it's still possible for some... I mean, there are aromantic asexuals, but most people who are asexual still fall in love, still experience close emotional connections to other people, even romantic connections to other people, and still want to form close relationships with other people.
Yeah, and I think, you know, looking at kind of what the current definition is of asexuality, I really like this. There's a sexual orientation generally characterized by not feeling sexual attraction or desire for a partnered sexuality. So not necessarily wanting any sort of sexual relationship. But it's distinct then from celibacy, and it says, which is the deliberate abstention from sexual activity. Some asexual people do have sex. I really like this idea, right, that you can be asexual and that you don't have to be just like, oh, no sex, no sexual desires, no sexual attractions. I'm dead inside. Everyone should just die. Like, it's not like that at all. Right. Yeah. It's me and my 18 cats and my farm.
Like Beatrice.
No one in 5 hours drive of me.
That's kind of my ideal life.
You and your 18 cats and no other people.
Me and my 18 cats and no people.
Love it. That's me and my dogs, right? I told my boyfriend the other day that I saw this article about a couple that every anniversary gets a new dog. And I was like, baby, this is what we're doing. Every anniversary, we're getting a dog. And he was like,
oh my God,
we're going to have a bajillion dogs. Yeah, exactly. That's my idea.
That's so the point.
We struck a compromise last night because he wants kids and I want dogs. So I said, the ratio should be one dog per one child plus a bonus dog for me. That's my perfect life right there.
Especially if you're the one who has to give birth. I think you should get at least one dog.
At least one bonus dog for myself.
Yeah. For the torture you're going through.
Exactly. I agree. But I think, you know, that brings about a good point, right? So even though I identify as bisexual and I'm in a relationship with a straight man, I still don't necessarily fit in that, like, oh, I want to settle down and have children. Like, you can still have different desires even within what people would consider, like, oh, it's a straight relationship. Well, not really. Mm. I still want my dogs and no other people in my life.
Yeah. So one very, very helpful website on the interwebs is www.asexuality.org. And it's the Asexual Visibility and Education Network, AVEN. Hmm. And they're also... I just really would like you to all go there and just have a look because it's a really, really helpful website. It's like It's asexuality.org. It's the Asexual Visibility and Education Network. And it's it's like the biggest like asexuality organization, and it's really, really helpful. Mm. And they also talk a lot about the fact that you can identify straight or gay or bi or anything else, but still fit the definition of asexuality.
Oh, and their website is super easy to use as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now. And it looks really good.
It is. It is really cool. And I actually did a lot, like I used it a lot for this episode because I think it's really, really a helpful resource. Yeah, so on the website they also state, quote, there is no reason why you have to identify as just one thing. You could decide to identify as a bi asexual or as polyamorous and asexual or as an asexual polyamorous bi person, or you could make up your own entirely new identity. But remember, whether or not you fit the definition of asexuality, you're welcome in the asexuality community.
Oh, I like that.
So They're also nice. That's good. And then I think one thing that's also important is that we have to remember that human beings are complex and confusing and difficult.
Yes, very difficult.
also not as nice as cats. But one thing that is also very typical for human beings is that sexuality is something that's kind of very often, not for everyone, but very often, like, very fluid, and it's like happening on a spectrum, and everything's complicated.
And in your teen years, it's even worse because you don't even know what's going on, and hormones.
Yeah, maybe you don't even know. Maybe you don't know what's going on until you die, which is also
fine.
That's
probably me. Yeah,
it's okay. My point is. The point to this very long prologue is that asexuality, like everything else about humans and human sexuality, exists on a spectrum. Surprise. Mm. So.
Shocker.
Yeah, I know. So to put it very in a very simplified way, so on the one side of the spectrum is, of course, like complete asexuality, which is no sexual attraction, no sexual activity. And on the other side of the spectrum, we have sexual people, right? And then in the middle, there's also a lot of middle ground, of course. There is this thing called gray asexuality, and that's kind of a complicated concept. It's not really complicated, but it might be difficult for people to understand that have never come across the idea of asexuality. Because gray asexuality is a group, a type of sexuality or a type of sexual identity that defines people who strongly identify with asexuality but don't really feel that they're not quite asexual. So, and Avon again has a few examples. So it's a person who feels sexual attraction infrequently or low intensity or to few people or in very specific circumstances. Or someone who feels sexual attraction but has no desire to act on it. Mm-hmm. Somebody who has confusing or ambiguous feelings of sexual attraction, which is all of us.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait, I think that encompasses everyone,
like
ever.
Like everyone. or a person that feels sexual attraction, that feels that sexual attraction is not a meaningful concept to them personally. Mm. And I think it's also important to understand that all identity categories are always an approximation that help us describe our feelings, help us find community. But it's not, you know, we define the terms. It's not that we are defined by the terms. And it's always just like an approximate description of our feelings and sexuality, whatever. And then one specific type of... specific variety of asexuality that I would like to talk about a bit more is demisexuality. And very often it's also understood as a specific variety, a specific form of gray asexuality, namely the one that states that gray asexuals are people who experience sexual attraction only in specific circumstances, because demisexuality means that you only feel sexual attraction after forming a very deep emotional bond with another person.
Yeah.
And most people that are non-asexual feel sexual attraction to people, whether they have an emotional, close emotional bond with someone or not. You know, right. You may have sexual feelings for someone you see on the street and someone, you know, like a colleague at work or, you know, celebrities, whatever. And you may choose to not have sex with people for a variety of reasons, like it's not possible to have sex with Angelina Jolie is one of those reasons. But then another reason is also that you are probably in, for example, in a relationship and you don't want to have sex outside of that relationship. So it's a choice. But demisexual people don't have those feelings. Yeah. So... you might, for example, be in a relationship with someone and have that close emotional bond and enjoy sex very much with that one person, but you don't want to have sex with your coworkers that other people might find attractive. So
yeah, and I think...
And so it's not because
actually,
you choose
here's
not
a, here's
to...
a question for you. Yeah, is it you don't actually feel sexual attraction towards them because you don't have that strong emotional bond? So it's not like... you're having a sexual relationship with your partner whom you have a close bond formed with. And then you see a coworker at work and you're like, oh, they're attractive. If I wasn't seeing, if I wasn't seeing someone, I would totally, you know, go out for drinks with them. Like, it's not like that. You literally just don't feel that at all.
Exactly. I think my explanation was a bit too complicated, but I think that's really the point there. The attraction only comes after the emotional bond. Mm. So that's kind of a prerequisite. And if you might as well not choose to act upon desires when you're, for example, in a relationship or something, but that's a choice. And as a demisexual, you don't even have to make the choice because it just doesn't occur to you. Before I start talking about it in more detail, I also want to suggest another webpage to you, which is demisexuality.org. And that's also very useful when you want to find information on that topic. Mm. And on demisexuality.org, they also say that, quote, many demisexuals grow up feeling different from those around them. Most people have their first instance of sexual attraction in their preteen years. From that point on, sex becomes a topic of curiosity and interest for them, and they eventually look forward to pursuing it. For children and teens in schools, there is a lot of talk about sex, what it's like, what it'll be like, etc. This becomes more prevalent as they approach college and early adulthood. And at this point, I would like to talk about my own experience because, demisexuality is a category that I identify with. So I actually would categorize myself as a demisexual. It's not really a term that I use in conversation with other people. First of all, because it's nothing that anybody understands.
Is that like secondly, being a demigod?
Yeah, that's exactly what it means. And then secondly, I prefer just explaining my experience instead of using a label, I think. So,
yeah.
And using that label would necessitate explaining my experience again anyways, because nobody understands that label. Mm. So it has the same result. So I usually don't use that label in conversation with other people, but it was a very important revelation for me when I first came across the word demisexual. And I had the same experience when I came across the word bisexual, which is it applies to me, and it gave me a word to describe my experience. So during my adolescence, the thing that I later came to understand as my demisexuality was a huge source of alienation and feeling of being different from people around me. And I have to say that it's to a certain extent still is. When I was a teen, I think it was the main source of alienation because I never understood why people go out and make out and hook up with people they don't know. And the mere thought is just disgusting to me.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I'm also an introvert like you, Bethany, and I don't get going out to places where there are lots of people and where there is like a lot of noise. I said, I like staying at home with my 18 cats.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. It's also about the sexualization of those spaces that I found very alienating, because it's just something that really put me off and something I don't share. It's something I cannot share because I don't feel like that.
Yeah.
And, I'm not asexual in a traditional sense, but I don't have interest in having sex with people I don't know. And it's not just people that I don't know, it's people that I don't have a very close, trusting, loving relationship with. And it's not, something that a lot of my liberal friends misunderstand is that when I say that, they think it's because I'm being a prude or conservative, or like I've been called a prude so many times, and I've been side-eyed by liberal friends who are nonetheless, like, apart from the topic, are very like cool people.
Yeah.
But they just don't understand that it's nothing that I do because I'm repressed or conservative. But it's just I have zero desire to make up with someone that I have no feelings for.
Yeah.
It's not being
fun and flirty. It's like it literally is repulsive.
Yes, exactly. And I have nothing. There is nothing that I have to repress because there is nothing there. I don't have, nothing apart from disgust, maybe. But it's just something I don't want to do. And I think it's something that people need to understand that. Yes, we live in a culture where there is a lot of slut shaming, but there is also this thing called that I would like to call prude shaming, you know.
Mm. So frigid.
Yes, which is just as toxic, and it makes people, can make people very ashamed, especially when you're still young and you try to fit in and try to, you know, be like your peers. And it's just, you just feel that disconnect and that shame because you know you're different, but you have no way of expressing that. And you also think that you're the only one who experiences what you're going through.
Yeah, it's maybe that feeling of what am I doing wrong, or like my feelings and my experiences are invalid because they're not the same as everyone else's. What's exactly wrong with me? And it just kind of further removes you from being, from feeling like you're able to relate and be relatable to people your age and in your social circles. And I think there's this really big thing that I just want to drop in that, you know, as you said, there is a big difference between being kind of an asexual or demisexual in this way and just being an introvert, right? Because with me, for example, as someone who has introverted tendencies, I would say that going out to a club and hooking up with someone I don't know kind of scares me shitless, in the sense that I would actually like have to talk to someone that I don't know, or at the very least, you know, shut down that part of my brain which just swarms with insecurities with every piece of clothing I take off, you know, and to have that awkwardness of like post-sex, what the fuck do I do now sort of thing. I during my master's, so like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, towards the end of my program, a couple of my friends convinced me to go out clubbing for the first time ever with them. Mm-hmm. And I'd had a really bad relationship, and I thought, I don't know, I've never been into this whole let's hook up with someone at a club sort of thing, but I thought, I'll give it a go, I guess. And at the end of the night, there was this really hot guy, and I ended up bringing him home. But actually,
was he only hot at the end of the night after you had a little drink?
Oh God, I'd had so much vodka. He might have been the most ugly man ever, but it was the end of the night and I was going to go home with someone. Yeah. But you know, the thing was that before we even got in the taxi, I told him, you're going to sleep on my floor. I was like, I don't want to have sex with you. I just want to understand why people want to go home with someone. And he was, I guess he was an undergrad, which I found out later just made me feel worse about myself. But he said, I just finished my exams and I really just want to cuddle someone tonight and whatever. And I was like, that's fine. So we came back to my flat and we cuddled for a while. And then I pushed him off the bed and was like, I wasn't kidding. You're sleeping on the floor. And he did. He slept on my floor and he cooked me breakfast in the morning, you know. But
wow.
I know. And then I gave him the wrong number by accident because I still hadn't memorized my number. So I felt really bad about it. But my the whole point to that, right, is that I was capable of doing it, even though I was terrified by the idea. Now, I couldn't have sex with him because I can't have sex with someone that I don't know, in part probably because I have so many insecurities that I can't get out of my own head. But my point is, right, I am capable of doing that, whereas someone who identifies as demisexual or asexual literally will have no desire to do this. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But like, you know, for our listeners, if you have friends and you're going to go out and whatever, you have to be aware that sometimes when someone says, you know, I'm just not into that, it could be shyness. It could be literally they're just not attracted to that sort of idea. And you just have to be respectful. Like, don't call them frigid. Don't call them a prude. They don't have to have some sordid yet depressing sexual history of abuse. Like, that's just the psychology of it.
And even if you do, it's none of your fucking business.
You really want to bring that up. Like, oh, let's have a good, you know, a great fun night out. Oh, you don't want to do that. What, were you assaulted? Like, really? Is that the kind of thing that you need to bring up? No.
I mean, I think the key thing that you said is just fucking be respectful to the people around you and just accept that everyone's basically has their own unique kind of sexuality, and the people can or cannot express it the way that they choose to. And it's absolutely not your right to, you don't actually have absolutely no right to judge that or
Yeah, and if you want to judge someone, it, then do it. Oh, it's just because you've never done it before. Well, trust me, there are some things I haven't done that I know I do not want to do. So exactly. You've just got to step back and go, okay, they have a reason for not wanting to do this. If it's something that I enjoy, I'll go out and do it. I don't need to force someone to go out and do it with me. There's just no reason for that.
Just let people do whatever the fuck they want.
Stop judging each other. Love, compassion, no judgment.
I'm a very judgmental person, but at least I judge people friendly.
Exactly. Do it in your head.
I keep it to myself.
Not with your voice.
I tell it to my cat.
There you go.
Also, I'm not judging people about their sexuality. I'm only judging them about
being
things
an
like,
ass.
Being an ass and about things like shoe choices. That's
a good
big
one. Haircuts. Yeah. That's my thing.
Haircuts. Yeah, a lot of things. But then only the people that I don't like in the first place.
Yeah.
So usually if I like people, then they, if when I, you know, my friends, some of them have horrible taste, but they're allowed to wear ugly shoes, for example. But then if there's like a person who's an asshole, then their horrible shoes are an expression of their horrible personality.
Exactly. You know? I agree with you.
So, thank you.
So speaking of pathology and psychological analysis.
Yeah.
And judging others.
So if you want to judge people, judge them on their shoes, not on their sexuality, is our message.
That's our new tagline. I like it.
We're
going to have fridge magnets with that printed on them now.
Judge people on their shoes.
Not their sexuality. Yeah.
Not their sexuality. Yeah.
I like it.
I don't know how to get back to the topic again, but I could just read the headline. And the headline is pathologization.
You did that really well because I kept stumbling over that word in my own head. So
okay. Well done. Good. So that is our next segment. And so when you look at how asexual people are talked about, most people don't even know the term asexuality or don't know that it's a valid sexual orientation. Sometimes people just think it's people who don't have sex, which is also not true.
Right.
And often they also think of asexuals as frigid or damaged. So
that makes me angry.
And we kind of talked about this already, that not having sex or not wanting to have sex is considered weird, unhealthy, prudish, conservative.
Oh, yes. And again, saving yourself? No, I just don't want to have sex. Like, what?
Yeah. Specifically not with you.
Right, exactly.
Because of your shoes.
Exactly.
So being conservative has nothing to do with whether someone is asexual or not. You can be asexual and the most progressive person on the planet.
I like
and
that. It has flair. Asexual.
Exactly. So those two things have absolutely nothing to do with each other. I challenge you to pronounce it that way for the rest of this episode. Asexual.
I will try.
Yeah. It sounds like a fancy name.
Like a perfume.
Asexual.
Yeah, I love it. I would love to see a perfume commercial with a perfume of that name where literally there's no sexual tension or attraction between other people in the adverts. How refreshing would that be?
And it smells like cats.
Maybe not. I don't think I could go that far.
I'm sorry. No.
But something nice and doesn't have pheromones in it. How about that?
Something doesn't have pheromones in it.
Yeah.
Like most perfumes don't have pheromones in it.
I know. We want something that doesn't attract anyone sexually.
We want just something that repels people sexually.
Yeah.
An opposite of pheromones.
Yeah. Like anti-gravity, anti-pheromones.
Anti-gravity.
I don't know what that would be. I don't know what that would be, but we're going to come up with it.
At least we have a name and it's called asexual.
Asexual. There we go.
So the thing that I get most is that when I say that I don't have sex, because I'm not in a relationship at the moment, and all of my friends want me to, go on Tinder and OkCupid. And I do,
That's
I mean,
so
I need those profiles.
That's so anxiety-inducing for me.
What?
That's so anxiety inducing for me. Like, I've had people say, like, oh, just go on Tinder. Okay. But no. No thanks.
I actually do have a Tinder profile, but I would never for the life of me meet anyone.
Yeah.
I just look at people and judge them. That's what I do.
That's what Tinder's particularly, for.
Yeah, particularly, and also it's kind of it's if you're into gender studies, it's really interesting to look at performance of masculinity and femininity and Tinder, but that's another topic. But that's one of the reasons why I'm there for. So, and even my I had my gynecologist appointment last week, and my gynecologist asked me when I had sex the last time, and it's a long time ago. Yeah. And like the response that I always get from her is like, why? And I was like, you know, there's just no one I want to, like, I don't have a person I want to have sex with. There's no one I want to have sex with. And she's like, you have to go on Parship and OkCupid. And I'm like, I'm a fucking gynecologist, mind your own business.
Like, you're a doctor. You should understand that sometimes people don't want to have sex.
Yeah.
There's nothing like, so, there's no abusive sexual history, whatever, that necessarily prevents you from, I'm not talking about you in particular, but if someone goes to their gynecologist and says, I haven't had sex in a while and I'm okay with that, like, end of story. Nothing wrong with that. No reason why your gynecologist should be like, here is your prescription for eHarmony. I mean,
yeah. No, I think she meant well, and she's I really like my gynecologist. She's just really nice, but she's always so puzzled when I tell her. Like, and it's the same thing every year. It's the same thing when I come every year and tell her that I haven't had sex for a long time, and she's always like, why? You know? And I was like, it's just none of your business. Just do your job and leave me alone. Yeah. And so I think, you know, people just, I think this is kind of the message that I want to get out, that it's nothing, people just sometimes don't want to have sex, and sometimes they don't want to have sex in specific situations, and sometimes they just choose to not have sex with specific people, sometimes they choose to have sex with just one specific person, but it's like their business, and it's nothing to do with being repressed or complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I just experience sexual attraction in specific contexts. I usually only experience sexual attraction to one specific person at the time. And once that person is no longer in my life, there might be another person at some point that takes up that place. But for all other people, sorry, but I'm not interested. I'm just not interested. And it doesn't mean I'm always completely happy with it. Of course, I also go through phases where I'm really lonely because of that.
Yeah.
But then just going out and having sex with other people is no solution for me, because that's not what I want. And it just would, I think it would really traumatize me. So no, I don't want to do that.
No,
I don't want to do that.
Don't traumatize yourself.
No, I'm already traumatized enough.
Because all those awful, awful profiles on Tinder, right?
Because I have to look at like six packs all day.
Oh God. I like a woman with an intelligent personality who doesn't show off her body. Okay, I can't even see your face in this picture, but thanks.
Thank you. no cheap ladies, please. look at my butt.
Exactly.
Okay, but even within the medical and psychological community, there's still a lot of pathologization of asexual people. Or people on that spectrum. And the DSM-4 of the American Psychiatric Association still recognizes a disorder called hyposexual desire disorder. And then it was in the DSM-5, it was changed, but it was changed gender specifically, which is even more problematic, I think. There is one study that I read, and to my knowledge, up to this date, it's kind of the only study assessing negative bias against asexual people by heterosexuals. And it's called, it's published by McInnes and Hodson in 2012. And it's called Intergroup Bias Toward Group X, Evidence of Prejudice, Dehumanization, Avoidance and Discrimination Against Asexuals. And this Group X that comes from Kinsey, because Kinsey, the well-known sexologist, because he referred to asexuals as group X in his studies.
God, dehumanization, that's such a strong sentiment to look at someone and say, just because you don't have any sexual desires that I can see or experience myself, you therefore must be inhuman.
Yeah, and that's actually something that comes up a lot in the study too, that asexuals tend to be sometimes viewed as less human than sexual people because they lack something that is perceived as intrinsically human. Jeez. You know, so like they are kind of understood as more like robotic or like, do you know what I mean? Like
because you don't have sexual desire, you clearly therefore don't have feelings.
You don't have feelings. Exactly. That's kind of the thinking behind it, I think. Yeah, but there is there's a huge gap when it comes to research, which is also because researchers themselves have only recently begun to consider asexuality as a normal part of human experience and human sexuality. And they found out, I quote, "Strikingly, on many key measures, particularly intergroup evaluations, dehumanization, and for the most part, contact intentions, we find significantly more bias against asexuals than other sexual minorities, and discrimination intentions matching that against homosexuals.
Wow.
Overall, we find clear evidence of a previously unidentified and strong sexual minority prejudice, anti-asexual bias." And they also found out that those people prejudiced against asexuals are the exact group of people that are also prejudiced against homosexuals and bisexuals, which is probably not very surprising.
Shocking.
But they also found that the anti-asexual prejudice is particularly extreme a lot of times. They say, not only are more negative attitudes leveled towards sexual minorities versus heterosexuals, but anti-asexual prejudice is the most pronounced of all. So,
Now, I don't know if you know this, but when they did this study, were they talking to people who were only heterosexual, or did they look at other sexual minorities to see how other sexual minorities viewed asexuals?
As far as I know, they asked heterosexual people.
Okay.
Because one of the studies they also refer to is the study by Herrick that we also talked about in the bisexuality episode, right, by negativity episode. And there, the group that was questioned was also heterosexual people. So I think also for matters of comparison, they kind of did a very similar study with similar groups. And then I would like to quote another thing that they wrote, which is, quote, "Although anti-asexual bias is a clear component of sexual minority prejudice, it is also unique in that it was repeatedly stronger than bias toward other sexual minorities," which is interesting, right? Because in the bi-negativity episode, we also talked about how when you look at how homosexual and bisexual people are perceived by heterosexual people, usually the prejudice against bisexual people is stronger.
Right.
But then apparently when you add asexual people to the equation, they are the ones that are worst off. And maybe that's also because many people don't even understand that it's a sexual orientation.
Yeah.
So, and they go on stating, quote, "Most disturbingly, asexuals are viewed as less human, especially lacking in terms of human nature." "This confirms that sexual desire is considered a key component of human nature, and those lacking it are viewed as relatively deficient, less human, and disliked. It appears that asexuals do not fit the typical definition of human, and as such are viewed as less human, or even non-human, rendering them an extreme sexual orientation outgroup and very strong target of bias."
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ. And that, I think, also makes it necessary to come up with a term that describes that kind of bias. So is it a phobia? Is it a negativity? There is so little research and so little like talk about this that I don't think we've come up with a definite term on it. But
no, actually,
maybe a negativity.
Well, I was reading through the UC Davis website, but also a couple of other just small websites that I found, so I'm not sure how widely used this term is allosexual, which I'd never heard of before. So I saw on the UC Davis website, like I said, and a few others, but basically it's the discrimination and exclusion that oppresses asexual people. And then you have allosexual, which is a sexual orientation.
Sorry, Beth, interrupt you for a second? Because the term you're looking for is allosexist, I think.
Discrimination. Yes.
yeah. I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify.
No, you're
that.
Right. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So allosexist is a discriminatory bias against asexuals.
Yes.
And then allosexual
was a sexual orientation generally characterized by feeling sexual attraction or a desire for partnered sexuality. So allosexual encompasses any people who feel sexual attraction. And allosexism is this mindset that having any sexual attraction, whether it's straight, gay, literally anything, is better than not experiencing sexual attraction at all. And so thereby kind of perpetuating this stigma that if you don't experience this carnal sexual desire that is apparently so integral to being human, there's something inherently wrong with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of brings me to another thing that I wanted to talk about, which is how not to be an allosexist asshole, which I love that alliteration, by the way. let's not be like allosexual anonymous would be awful. We'd all just sit around and be like, people should have sex. That'd be the worst.
People should have sex. I don't understand why they don't have sex.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking about it all day.
Yeah, why don't other people have sex? I don't understand.
So. Yeah, it's bothering me so much. Also, it has such an impact on my life that other people that I don't know don't have sex all the time.
So one of my best friends in the whole world identifies as asexual. And I think she's actually probably the first person I've been close friends with who actively identifies that way. And a lot of that is because I think I grew up in a really kind of small conservative Christian community, but also because we're starting to learn more about asexuality and people are realizing like, oh yeah, that's me. But I was just thinking about some of the things that I'd seen kind of online relating to being asexual. So my friend is dating this really lovely girl who I think identifies as bisexual. And I say that not because she's only dated men in the past, but because I literally have no clue how she chooses to identify, and it doesn't impact my life. So until she decides that it's important to tell me, I don't know. But when they first started dating, I think one of my first thoughts was, I wonder how many people are going to ask them if they've decided to be lesbian now. You know, we talked about that in the bi-negativity episode, right?
Yeah.
Where we're like,
have you decided to be a lesbian?
Like, oh, are you straight now because you're dating a man? Like,
yes, now I'm straight.
No, obviously my sexual attraction changed once I got into a relationship, and here's my bisexual passport back. But I think it's really important to emphasize again that being in a relationship with someone does not mean that you change your sexual identity. It just means that you've chosen to be in a relationship with someone. Being in a relationship with someone does not mean that you've suddenly been, you know, struck by the heavens with some insane urge to go out and have lots of sex. Like, you can be in an incredibly fulfilling relationship and not have sex. You can be in an incredibly fulfilling relationship and choose not to have sex because you just don't want to at the moment.
Yeah.
You can be in an incredibly fulfilling relationship and not want to have sex and have no desire. Yeah. Because relationships are not built on sex. Like, for me personally, being in a healthy relationship means having a healthy and also a healing relationship sexually with my partner. But just because that is my personal experience does not mean that everyone else has to have that same experience and those same desires. Like, my friend and her girlfriend have one of the most beautiful and loving relationships I've ever witnessed. Like, I went out to lunch with them last week and they were just absolutely adorable, like nuzzling up to each other every now and then. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy, you know. But I'm sitting there, and while I doubt that they have sex despite being so intimate, I also recognize that it's none of my goddamn business. And I don't really want to know if they're having sex or not. If they want to talk to me about it, fine. But if you feel the need to call someone out as a fraud in their asexuality because they're in a relationship and you think that means they must be having sex, then you need to just check yourself and like step back and realize it's not about you. Like, let people be.
And let them live.
Yeah. How do you avoid being an allosexist asshole? Stop wondering if other people are having sex and start wondering if you can be friends with them because you're a human and they're a human and you can be human beings together. And, you know, hopefully you have interests outside of rampant sexuality. I would hope. I would hope that your friendships are not all based on, oh my God, we both have sex. Maybe not with each other. Maybe with each other. Like, you know, and I think that if you happen not to be asexual like me and you don't know enough about it, then it's all about being respectful. And part of that is researching, educating yourself, reaching out to members of the asexual community to ask them about their experiences, because that's the only way to learn. Like, regardless of your own personal sexual identity, we have to kind of band together and advocate for each other. Like I was saying before, you can't just, you know, stop bitching about how long the LGBT alphabet is. If you have a problem with additional letters being added and, you know, encompassing further sexual identities as we kind of start to talk about them and discover them and address them, you're probably already represented and it's not all about you. Like, you've got to be willing to get out there and learn about some of these things, which is why I think those websites you gave us were so important, because it gives you information both as someone who is asexual or demisexual, but also as someone who's not, who wants to be an ally or who wants to understand more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's just one thing that I wanted to add when you were talking about your friend, and it's not about your friend specifically, but you were talking about, you know, you not being in a position to wonder whether your friend has sex or not, which is completely right.
Yeah.
But I would also like to add that even if she has sex with her girlfriend, or even if anyone has sex in their relationship, that doesn't mean that they're not asexual, because particularly asexuals who are in relationships with people who are not asexual sometimes have sex with their not asexual partners.
Yeah.
Just because someone is asexual doesn't mean that they find sex extremely horrifying and horrible. It just means that it's not something that they would, that they have an incentive to do on their own.
Yeah, it's like, not the same, you know, sort of drive that someone who's in a sexual relationship has, where you desire to have sex on a regular basis and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because intimacy can come in so many different forms, right?
Yeah. And just respect people, I think, is the bottom line.
And I also wanted to say, you know, so I went through a really, really bad, abusive sexual relationship. And when I came out of it, I didn't want to have sex, but that didn't mean that my sexuality changed, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes there's this idea that, like, oh, because in this moment I don't want to have sex, maybe I'm asexual. No, no, I'm still bisexual. I'm just choosing at this moment not to have sex. So there's a difference even there between someone who's choosing in the moment not to have sex, or, you know, oh, I'm out at a club and I don't want to go out and go home with someone afterwards. That is the difference between that choice and completely actually lacking the desire. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just different than your personal experience.
Yeah, and whatever the reasons are for people's sexual lives or not sexual lives, is absolutely their thing. You know, it's absolutely their business. It's none of your business. And whatever the reasons are, whatever the choices are, you just, the only thing you have to do is respect it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Judge people for shoes, not.
Yeah,
judge people for shoes, not for sexualities. Not
sexuality. Yeah, I like it. You know, I think we have that Facebook discussion group, and I think it would be really cool if people feel comfortable to just kind of maybe hop on there. We can have a discussion about different types of sexuality, because like we said, there's so many different ways that you can identify, and I don't even know about most of them. I mean, I think there are some that I'm just totally clueless about. because the people that I know tend to identify as either straight or bisexual or lesbian. But I think that's kind of about it. And it would be interesting to see how other people feel they identify in that way.
Yeah, that would be so cool. Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you're willing to let us ask you questions, guys, please, please, please let us know. Because we would definitely be really interested in continuing that conversation.
Absolutely. And the Facebook group is always a good way to get in touch with us. It's, you know, you can find us, you can find the Facebook group via the Facebook page. It's She Who Persisted, the Nasty Podcast. And just enter the group and ask us whatever you want. Discuss things with us, you know, any topic that we discussed on this, on the podcast, or also you can suggest topics to us there, whatever. So it's really a forum for all of the listeners.
And it's open. I mean, you can pretty much talk about anything. The group is there for us to kind of discuss and educate ourselves, because we want to be as educated as possible. And we know that, like, I obviously know that I can't speak from a place of experience when it comes to asexuality and demisexuality and things like that. So if there's something we've said that you don't agree with, obviously talk to us about it, because we want to be able to talk to you guys about things and represent you, but also learn from you as well.
Completely, yeah. So as Oscar Wilde said, you can never be overdressed or overeducated.
Absolutely.
So put on your best shoes and tell us what you think. Teachers, put on your best shoes and teachers.
I love
that. That should be on buttons.
I love
it. And t-shirts.
Let's do it.
Put on your best shoes and teach us. Okay, so to wrap this up, if you or someone you love might be or is asexual and you're looking for community and support, you can go to the AVEN website. As I already said, it's www.asexuality.org. If you live in a German-speaking country, which many people that listen to us are from Germany or Austria, you can go to aven.de. It's AVEN.de. And they also have like a German forum there, which is really cool.
Nice.
Then there is also a demisexuality resource center, which is demisexuality.org. And that website is available in English and German, which is also cool. You can also visit the blog demigray.org. That's demigray.org. And that's a blog for demisexuals and gray asexuals. I will put all of those links up on the blog. If there are more links that you want to share with us and our listeners, then even maybe like local groups or forums, I think that's also very, very useful, because then there's people you can also meet probably in real life if it's like local groups.
Oh.
Then also please share that within like meeting actual people. Whoa.
Ah, terrifying.
I know. I'd stay at home with my cats. But if you're into meeting other people, some people are, then, and you know, like local groups and forums, then please share them also on the Facebook discussion group or, and then you can also
send us a message. We can also post those things as well.
Yeah. You can also message us on Facebook. You can message us at She Who Persisted Pod. Was it She Who Persisted Podcast at gmail.com?
At gmail.com. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. She Who Persisted Podcast at gmail.com. Then we have a Twitter at She Persisted Pod. What else do we have?
Instagram. Forgot all of
that. It's been such a long time. We've got an Instagram that we post pictures to. I don't really know what to do with it, but, you know, we have an Instagram because we're the cool kids. and then, yes, please like us on Facebook. Please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and wherever you listen to your podcast. If you can, rate and subscribe and review us. That really help us, because it helps other people find us, and everyone needs more nasty in their lives, right?
Absolutely. Positive nastiness.
Positive nastiness, nice shoes, education.
Absolutely.
We'll hear from you, or you hear from us, very soon.
Yes.
Next time with Heather and Elizabeth, so you can look forward
to that. Absolutely. Yes. Until, we'll get the gang until then, back together.
Yes. Until then, make sure you wear nice shoes. You don't judge other people for their sexualities. Stay educated and stay nasty.
Stay nasty.
Bye.
Bye.